Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Lords Podcast with Will Rowe.
Well, a very warm welcome to this month's podcast. Lots to get through after a special month of Test cricket that's seen England regain the urn after taking an unassailable 3-1 lead in the Investec Ashes series. The county season is coming to a climax with 2020 Finals Day this month. The Royal London One Day Cup is in full swing and the county championship is heading for its final stages. Well, joining me today to discuss all this, I'm very pleased to be joined by Middlesex spinner Ollie Rayner and All Out Cricket Magazine's Joe Harmon. Welcome both.
Thanks for having me again.
Good to see you, Will.
Good month, Ollie. Busy?
Very busy indeed, yeah. Just starting sort of been in a week off since Tuesday, but up till then it's been absolutely hectic, as you can probably imagine.
And Joe, as a scribbler, you've been pretty busy with the Ashes, I imagine.
It's been busy, yeah. I mean, we've had a few days off because England keep winning really, really quickly.
That's true.
So that's been nice. But yeah, it's been hard to keep up with. It's been non-stop action.
Well, we'll come to England's Ashes victory already. It seems bizarre to say that. But before that, we've got some questions that you've tweeted into us under the hashtag AskRains. So, Ollie, I'll fire away. The first question comes from G. Krishan. He says, what advantage or disadvantages are there to being a tall spinner?
Well, I don't know. I'm quite happy to be described too as a spinner, to be honest, at the start. But I suppose advantages is the bounce. Don't necessarily have to rely on wickets being spinning. But on the same token, that's also a disadvantage. If I do finally get one spin through the gate, often it goes over the top of off stump. Which is quite frustrating. I think, you know, it just adds slightly different dimension to it. You don't often see tall spinners, so people won't be as accustomed to it. Although I've been around a while now, the batsmen seem to have adapted to my bowling quite comfortably over the years. I suppose ultimately I'm glad that I am a tall spinner.
Just out of interest, how tall are you?
Yeah, I always say I'm just a shade under 6'6", so technically I'm 6'5".
So you should have been a fast bowler, really.
I'd snap. I wouldn't last very long, I'm afraid.
Next one comes from the @JohnSimpsonFans account. They say, how are you such a good slip fielder?
I don't know. Well, I practice a lot. You have to. But I think, first of all, I think every county cricketer probably has the ability to catch a slip catch. But I think it is a natural thing that when you hear a nick and then you realise it's coming to you, the good slip fielders who have been doing it for a long time won't really change their heart rate, etc. They won't get too excited, whereas someone who hasn't done it before, that naturally they'll probably panic. So it is a lot of practice, and then just being able to do it over the years and getting more used to the angles and stuff like that. But practice.
What about, I'd like to ask, what about the concentration with it? Because obviously when you're practicing, you're just there catching ball after ball after ball. You know, you might stand there for half an hour and catch 100 odd balls. In a county championship match, you might stand there for 2 hours, nothing comes your way, and then one comes, down low to your left. How do you, I don't know, you can't really practice concentration, but how do you build up the concentration?
Well, ironically, I mean, concentration has always been probably one of my poorest sort of attributes, if I'm honest. But I do actually think that helps me as well, because I can switch off. And sometimes I might not be, when I'm slipping the best, it's when I'm not necessarily thinking about getting a slip catch. It's second nature to me after all these years. I did a half season last year at first slip, and I dropped a few, because I have done second slip for so long. Everything's just, I know what's going on, I know the angles, and things just happen. And so it is a matter of practicing the angles as well, not just being able to catch. But yeah, I mean, yeah, like you say, you could go almost a day and not have one, and then the next day you get one first, second ball. You know, you just don't know when they're going to come, and that's really hard to practice in itself. But I think being able to switch off as well helps.
Good stuff. Lawrence Klein asks, tell us please about the run-up, I should add here, or maybe lack of run-up in your bowling. You seem to just take a stride in and bowl.
Yeah, well, I've cut it down every year, getting older, hence I couldn't bowl seam. Yeah, I mean, a run-up's purely there to get a bowler, whether it's a seam bowler, spin bowler, whatever they bowl, into their best position at the crease. You know, I've gone through, I've had long run-ups, I've had short run-ups, I've had little silly things come in, you know, like Moeen Ali, he throws his arms out and I do a bit of this and that. It's just natural. But a couple of years ago, I redid my whole sort of run-up and action because things weren't quite working and I took a bit of a gamble on it. And I decided that, you know, I'm not necessarily what you'd see as a typical English spinner, you know, beautiful action, lovely flowing side on, etc. So I was a little bit more like some of the subcontinent bowlers in terms of I'm quite front on and I use more of my shoulder than my rhythm. So I just thought, what's the point? I mean, I've done loads of training from like the coil, and I even, you know, sorry if no one knows what the coil is, it's just where you're standing there in your final position without a runner. And I bowled quite nicely from that. And I've actually thought at times, why do I even need a runner? But yeah, it's all a rhythm thing, really.
Mitchell asks on Twitter, he says, your best Middlesex performance, oval or Trent Bridge? And I presume by the oval he's referring to your 15 wicket haul there.
Yeah, I mean, as a bowler, I'd have to say the oval. It was a real special achievement. I wouldn't say, well, the Trent Bridge is looking a little bit more like a fluke because I haven't scored, obviously, 100 since. But you know, that was an absolutely great day, and it was just a different feeling, you know. But ultimately, I really love taking wickets, so
that's what you're there to do. Who's your childhood role model? That's from Ankita Saha.
Oh no, here we go. I had a little look at that one last night, and I said, I don't really. I said to Beth, I don't know whether I should tell them it was Banana Man or not. but I suppose in cricketing terms, although I didn't end up doing a similar job, you know, I really loved watching Andrew Flintoff play. I've always loved watching Gale play. I was kind of in two minds this year that we didn't get to play him in the 2020. I thought, thank God, you know, the way he's been teeing it up, he does it. But also it would have been nice to maybe chance my arm against him. But yeah, I'd probably say someone like a Flintoff.
Good stuff. Joe, I'll bring you in here, actually. Who's your childhood role model? Cricket or non-cricket?
Role model's tough because I'm not very good, so it's a bit different. My dad's a New Zealander, and I used to love watching Stephen Fleming bat. He was one of my favourite players growing up, and I grew up just down the road from St Lawrence Ground in Canterbury, so I had a Kent membership as a kid. So Cole Hooper was another I really liked watching, and Mark Elam with the ball is perhaps a slightly odd role model. But he put in a lot of good action equity Sunday league performances. Those were the ones that got me hooked.
Got you hooked on the cricket. Moving into the slightly more bizarre questions here, Ollie. What spell from Harry Potter, and I'd have to add that you're a big Harry Potter fan, would be the most useful in a cricket match?
Well, I was also thinking about this one. I had a little peruse over that last night as well. some sort of spell that could either turn back time because to rectify some of my mistakes, or some way I could slow down time. There is actually a thing in Harry Potter which isn't actually a spell, but more of a thing that Hermione Granger has,
all right,
which allows her to slow down and rewind time. So one of those would be quite handy.
Good stuff. Joe, do you read the Harry Potter books?
I do. I can't. What about the one where you get them to freeze them? That'd be kind of handy.
Oh, they just... Yeah.
You just bolt their pads all day.
Stupefy, I think.
Yeah. It's like Shane Watson for defensive, basically.
Yeah. So. But then you still got to try and get it straight, which is...
That is, yeah.
And just to finish the hashtag Ask Rains question, this one is utterly bizarre, but I asked it. I'm going to ask it anyway because it's quite funny. It's as a phantom door opens. Peter Miller, the cricket geek, said, would you rather be attacked by 10 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
Oh, probably one horse-sized duck, I think.
That'd be massive.
Yeah,
imagine
but then
a duck the size of a horse.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, maybe the smaller ducks, maybe.
Tiny little horses.
Sorry.
Joe?
I'd have to agree, yeah. Take the 10 small ones.
Well, there you go. It's 10 small horses every time. Thanks for those questions.
Yeah, thanks for that one.
Please keep them coming in. Always good to know that people are listening and interested to ask some questions on the Twitter sphere. Well, as I trailed at the top of the podcast, England have won the Ashes 3-1. They've regained the earning emphatic style, an almost unbelievable turn of events, considering England's defeat at Lord's less than a month ago has seen 2 3-day victories, meaning Alistair Cook and his side head to the Oval next week 3-1 up with just one to play. Put the question out to you both. How did that change of fortunes come around?
The change in fortunes since the defeat at Lord's?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really hard question to answer because this series has been such an odd one. It's when England lost that match, there was a kind of feeling that the Cardiff match was the anomaly, that Australia were going to then run away with it. Actually, looking back on it now, it looks like the Lord's defeat was the anomaly, and England are the better side in these conditions, certainly. It's really hard to pinpoint exactly where the change came about. Australia's batting has been weak throughout the series, and that obviously got covered up by Smith and Rogers, their two informed batsmen, both getting big runs at Lord's. When they failed to do that subsequently, the rest of them have just folded like a pack of cards. And then England have really, their bowlers have really come to the party. The spell that Stuart Broad produced was probably the best I've ever seen, I think. Certainly given the circumstance and how much was riding on that match, and with Anderson not there as well. So yeah, it's a weird one, but I think England are the better side, and that defeat is now looking like the slight anomaly in the series.
And Ollie, I mean, Joe's touched on it there, but obviously England bowled extremely well, but both the defeats to be inside 3 days, it's astonishing really for a test match.
I think it's obviously been great for English cricket, but I'd say if I was more of a neutral, I would obviously like to see the games go a little bit tighter and a little bit longer, and I'm sure the crowds who are relying on all the income from the games would probably agree. But I mean Joe's absolutely right. I mean, England were the better side overall, and I have to admit, I was sort of thinking at Lord's, that Lord's test, I was thinking, oh here we go. Like, this, thankfully, I thought it was going to be make it a little bit more interesting. But English bowlers bowled brilliantly, and ultimately, I think the English batsmen, although some of them had a bit of a hard time of it, have just played better in the conditions that they're in. I think the Australians have come over here and played like they would in Australia. They go quite hard at the ball, etc. I don't often agree with Geoffrey Boycott, and I wouldn't go as far as he did when I was watching the verdict or whatever, the Channel 5 highlights, but you know, he was saying, you know, they can't play the moving ball, which I think is probably a bit harsh, but they didn't play it as well, I didn't think.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the players that did play well, Chris Rogers dealt with it well. He's played in English conditions, you obviously know him very well. But yeah, they didn't seem to be able to play the moving ball. I read something the other day which was criticising the length of the tour. Do you think that's got anything to do with it? The Australians had two warm-ups before they came here.
There's been so much crap written recently since England won the series. It seems like we've got to a stage where you can't win a series just by being a better batting, bowling and fielding side. There has to be something else. There has to be dressing room fighting. The wags are putting people off. It's just... England played better than Australia, and that's it. It was the same when Australia thrashed us down under. It couldn't be accepted that we were just a poor side at that point and Australia were a very good one. It had to be that Kevin Peterson was upsetting things in the change room. That was a side personnel that had won many matches before. Obviously, there are always going to be bits of friction in a changing room. It would be weird if there wasn't. And those are going to be exaggerated when a side loses. But the reason England won this series is because they played better cricket, and that's it, really.
I blame the journalists personally.
Blame the journalists
too. Me too. Scotland's all out cricket.
Looking forward to the Oval. How do you see it going there? Can Australia? I mean, the Oval's going to be probably. It's traditionally a flatter wicket than Trent Bridge and Edgbaston.
I've been weighing this up. So I bet on England to win the series 3-2 at the start.
Oh really?
And I'm now weighing up whether to cash out and take my winnings or take some of the winnings. Because I can't see Australia winning this test match. I just think the beating they've had on the pitch and subsequently off the pitch, the frailties their batting line have showed in these conditions, it will be a flatter pitch. I can't see this one finishing in 3 days. I don't know what the weather's going to be like, obviously. But I think we're looking at another England win, personally. I think the turnaround... We saw the wheels come off for England down under. And I think the same thing's happened here with Australia.
just from your perspective, Jay, I was just thinking this, I hadn't really thought a lot about it actually, but you know, do you think it makes a massive difference between the fact that Alistair Cook's obviously led the team with runs and then Clark, to be honest, has looked out of nick? And I think when you've got such a pivotal person in a team that generally people rely on, if they're not doing well, it can sort of affect the travel of the team itself.
I think it's huge. I think it's no coincidence McGrath always used to pick out Atherton. He knew if he got Atherton, then as captain and leader of that side, then the rest of the England side would crumble. I think if you're a captain, you can get by if you're a captain and a batsman, you can get by if you're scoring runs or winning matches.
Absolutely.
If you're not doing both, then you're really struggling. And that's what Cook had last time round in Australia. It's what Clark's got now. And suddenly, when your side's not playing well, you obviously look at worst captain as well. There's not much you can do about that. If the bowlers aren't putting it in the right place, then it doesn't make you a worse captain. But that's the way that's the impression that people get.
Were the Australians too arrogant when they turned up in England?
Yeah, I think so. Haddon and Smith made some comments that they're probably regretting right about now.
I just don't know how you can make these comments, though. From a cricketing point of view, you're only ever tempting fate. You know? You never go in and say, oh, this guy can't bat, or, you know, he's a walking wicket. He's always got a chance he's going to get runs, or however, you know, that's a pretty crude analogy. But yeah, you just don't set yourself up for that, I don't think.
No, it's ludicrous. I mean, particularly given Australia's recent record over here. I mean, if they'd beaten us like they were 15 years ago, then perhaps you can feel a bit more comfortable in it. But they haven't won here since, what, 2002? To be so convinced they're going to win the series made no sense. There was a thing talking about turnarounds. I was thinking last night. Last time I was on the show with Ollie was May last year, right?
March, and I think.
Was it March?
I think it was.
Okay,
yeah.
So post the Ashes.
Because
we were picking a team for the Sri Lanka series,
yeah,
weren't we?
That's correct. Yeah.
At that point, Cook was the worst captain ever to walk the earth. Stephen Finn was apparently unpickable.
Yeah.
Joe Root had been dropped from England's last test match. It just goes to show you these things, you need to take them with a pinch of salt, have a bit of perspective, because things can turn around pretty quickly.
But just coming back on your point there, Ollie, about silly to say things, especially in the media, as a player though, you must think we're going to target that man, or you think, oh, maybe he can't bat, or if we you must, as a team, you must have those discussions, and you must have a certain amount of confidence, because they did come here, you know, having beaten England 5-0, so I called it arrogance, and I was being provocative there to get a reaction. But you must have. I'm not asking you to sort of name names, but as a team, you must think actually he's not much good.
Absolutely, yeah. We go through and we pick people to pieces, you know. In our pre-match, you know, you've got to think what's their weakness, how we get them out, what's their form, what's their run up to this game, etc., etc. But then to go out and say, if I came out to you the day before a county championship match, okay, it's on a smaller scale, and go, oh, we've got this one in the back, they're terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't know. You just don't know. You know,
it's about respecting.
Sussex weren't doing very well leading up to the game we've just played, but then the game went down. We won by 19 runs.
Yeah.
You know, and it looked like we probably should have. We thought we had enough, and if we got a few people out, we could win it a lot easier. We did get those people out, and we didn't win it that easily. You know, so you just don't know, and I just think you're tempting fate and all the false bravado and this, that, and the other. You know. Why? We're not at school anymore. You're talking about the Ashes tests, you know?
And Chris Rogers was speaking to us at the end of the last Ashes series, and he said that they almost had... This Australian side are actually a bit nicer than they like to make out, and they have to kind of make themselves seem more aggressive, seem nastier, because that's the way the Australian cricket team plays and traditionally always has done. But it just doesn't fit with this Australian side. I just think Haddon perhaps is a different case. He's kind of old school. But when you see Smith saying those things, I don't think that's what he's really like.
And you don't even buy it. You don't even buy it.
I don't even buy it. I think it seems kind of a bit pathetic and a bit disingenuous. And he's such a good batsman. Just score your runs.
I think it affects the way you play as well. Because if that's not you and you're trying to be something you're not, you're not concentrating what you actually are.
Yeah.
You know, we had this chat about Middlesex. So apparently, we're such a nice team all the time. La, la, la. We've got to be tougher. We've got to be nastier. But if you haven't got the people who are naturally like that, you've got to find a different way of doing things.
Yeah.
I don't think you can just say it's been ingrained in Australian cricket. We've all got to be this and puff our chests out and say we're the best and that. You know, if you've got the good enough players, it will come through.
Yeah, that's right.
And before we move on to Middlesex, I'd just like to sort of finish the Ashes discussion. Who's your man of the series on both sides so far with one to play? Who would you give it to?
It's a tough one between Root and Broad, really, I'd say. I would say Root because balls tended to dominate bats so far in this series. Root stands out as he's the leading run scorer at the moment in the series, particularly for England by some distance. He's just batted so brilliantly for a long period of time now, and he's deservedly ranked number one Test batsman in the world. So it'd be Root for me.
Joe Root, you
Root,
agree?
Hands down, yeah.
And Australia?
Rogers has probably been their rock.
Lions bowled nicely on not particularly helpful pitches. Rogers is...
I think Lyons a brilliant bowler.
Yeah.
I really do. I think he's a brilliant bowler. Because in these conditions as well, some of them have spun, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I don't know the stats, but I think he was about third leading wicket taker at some stage in the, you know, bowling spin in England.
Yeah.
Which notoriously, well, I don't find particularly easy. He's a much better bowler than I am, but I think he's been brilliant. But yeah, I think, like you say, in a series where balls dominated bat and Rogers, to be fair, has generally been there or thereabouts.
And just finally, on Australia, Michael Clarke, he's now announced his international retirement. It's quite a sad day for cricket. He's a great, great player. I mean, what were you sort of... How will you remember him as a player and a captain?
He's a tough one. I think he'll be... His legacy in Australia is quite a complex one. He's not especially popular in Australia. Even when he's done brilliantly, he's not been especially popular. There's, again, talking about this kind of bravado, he doesn't quite fit that border Steve Waugh, to a certain extent Mark Taylor, Ricky Ponting mould of kind of being that tough nut, because that's not really what he is. But he's obviously a very innovative captain, and when his side's doing well, he looks like a genius. He's been an absolutely brilliant batsman, much more so in Australia than overseas, but he's still had big innings over here. So I hope this tour doesn't reflect too badly on his career as a whole. I think people, when they look back at Michael Clarke's career, will talk of him as one of the great Australian batsmen, and I think that's right. As a captain, his legacy isn't going to be great because he's lost two series over here. Never won a series in England as a player or a captain, which is quite a big deal for an Australian legend not to have done. So I think it will be tainted to an extent, but hopefully not too much.
Right. Well, it's been another good campaign for Middlesex this season. Looks like it's definitely going to be Yorkshire's county championship to lose now. They're sort of well ahead there. But Middlesex are second in the table after a nail-biting win over Sussex here earlier this week. Ollie, I'm going to throw this to you, and I'm going to open it up with another Twitter question from James Clouting. He says, good to see the passion, he's referring to yourself, but did you feel a bit silly after your failed LBW appeal against Sussex on Monday?
Yes.
What did you do?
Just a bit of a tantrum, to be honest.
Did you?
Did you throw the toys out the pram?
I spat the dummy, which is not really... I don't often go that sort of road, but
no.
You know, it's a big game for the club and myself. You know, I've moved from Sussex. I got capped earlier this week. I was desperate to get a few wickets, and I got a couple of decisions I felt should have gone my way.
Was it plum?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, as a cricketer and with people watching, you've got to just take those on the chin and move on. And I didn't do that very well this week. But yeah, like you say, I mean, it's not because I'm trying to carry on and be a brat. You know, it was a high tension game, getting right down to the wire. I mean, I think at that stage, although I'd say it was probably still in our favour, you know, they only needed about 80 or 70 to win, with four wickets in hand, with some, you know, batsmen like Brown and things who are good batsmen still in. Ultimately, I did feel a bit silly, but you know, like I say, I didn't have much control over it. It was more sort of my emotions taking over, really. But I had a chat with the umpire. It was all fine and didn't get told off too badly or anything like that. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, we haven't brought you on here for sort of an X-Factor type apology or something.
No.
But you're second in the league. It was a fantastic victory here against Sussex on Monday. I think I've got it down as a 21-run victory.
No, 21.
21
then.
Run. But it was very close. Yeah, it went down to the... Final day, final session, so that was fantastic. It's been a good season for you with the Red Bull Middlesex.
Yeah, I think ultimately over the years we've obviously been, I think it would be fair to say.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Say we've targeted red ball as where we can succeed the best. We have put a lot of preparation into our white ball. It just hasn't quite better than previous years. So there's improvement there, which won't
we'll
mean much
to
the fans, but sticking to the Red Bull, yeah, it's been great. We've always been there or thereabouts. Last year we had a bit of a hiccup, nearly got relegated, but other than that, I think our first year we finished third, second year fourth after getting promotion. Obviously, nearly got relegated. Now we're back up in the hunt this year. So yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time. I think you're right. I don't think anyone's going to realistically catch Yorkshire. I probably shouldn't say that, but with Durham and Warwickshire losing and us winning this week, you know, a second would be a really nice sort of cherry.
Is there a feeling, we haven't seen a one side dominate 4 day county cricket for a long period of time, is there a feeling on the county scene that Yorkshire might start doing that, or do they not seem so far above the rest?
It's a really hard one because like you say, I don't know whether we see them as being so far above the rest, but they just somehow do it, you know.
That Durham game,
what was it? They were 95 for 7 or something, or 9, sorry. Scrambled to 150 or 160. Got Durham out for 10 more or less than what they got. And then they were about another 100 for 5 second innings. Got 400. How do they do it? We're saying to Gus, who's obviously our manager of cricket and... So our director of cricket and on the selectors said, just select all of them for the Yorkshire game and rest all the other ones and we'll have a chance. But
that's the amazing thing, the strength and depth, because there are so many players in the England side and they just seem to have, obviously they've got a big catchment area for young players. They've got a fantastic youth system.
I think as well as that, they've got some guys who I wouldn't want to say at this stage probably won't play for England again, but you know, like your Siddies and... obviously, Plunkett will play for England again, but he's in and thereabouts. Brooks is doing brilliantly, knocking on the door potentially. You've got all these guys who are just doing a great job. And Bresnan, you know, let's be honest, I don't want to say it, but possibly won't play for England again. So they've got a really good core.
You can say it, Joe.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely at this stage.
Well, you never know, but you know, either way.
It looks like his time has come and gone. And he was a great player for England.
But then he's still a magnificent county cricketer. He scored runs for them when they've needed it. He obviously takes his wickets. Rashid's done brilliantly. You know, they've just got a good core. And I think Gillespie is brilliant. I really do. I'm good friends with Andrew Hodd. And you know, he just rants about him all the time. So he's brilliant. And that's coming from someone who's not a sure thing in the first side with Johnny Burstow around. So if you're keeping a cricketer happy and he's not necessarily playing first team cricket, you're doing something right.
He's a columnist of ours in the magazine, actually, and I love his columns because there's nothing ever particularly complicated, but he just gets completely to the root of the subject he's covering, explains it really simply. It's just the kind of thing I can imagine if I was a cricketer and wanted a coach, he'd be exactly that kind of
Renowned for wanting really long, you know, complicated explanations for things. So yeah, no, he sounds just, he's got a great thing going there, and I think they've all bought into what he's bringing into the side since he's been there. So, you know, hats off to them, but yeah, they're going to be tough to beat.
And just on Yorkshire, I guess as a county, it's one with a, you know, huge cricketing pedigree and history. Does it help them that actually they have an Australian sort of Ashes winning, you know, legend to kind of look after all that? Because Yorkshire has historically, there's been some infighting there and people sort of vying for power. But I think there is absolute respect from everyone in that county for Jason Gillespie, which comes from maybe being an outsider walking in, but not just being an outsider, being one of the best outsiders you can have.
There is, but it's quite funny. Yorkshire was famously the county that didn't have overseas players for a long time until Sachin came along. So there's obviously been a change of perspective there. But what Moxon is there still as director of cricket. So it's not just Gillespie, it's the whole package they've got there. But I think you're right. I think anyone who's going to be a coach of Yorkshire has to have a pretty strong personality. He has to be able to front up to the fans who are more passionate there than anywhere else in the country. And Gillespie's obviously a good man to do that. He's approachable, but he's a hard man. And I think he's a perfect fit, really.
And Ollie, I'd like to ask about a comment you made a couple of minutes ago about Middlesex being a nice team. It's quite an interesting one, because I guess from the outside looking in, it is a nice bunch of lads. How does that affect you as a team, sort of, well, that perception, I guess?
I don't know. Well, we have addressed it, and we have tried to become, you know, like, you know, not trying to contradict what I said earlier about Steve Smith and etc. You know, there was an element of it that did sort of ring true, and maybe you want to play hard cricket. That doesn't mean you have to shout and swear at people and get in people's bubble, but you just we were trying to focus on just being relentless. You know, like Yorkshire. You know, when the chips are down, someone needs to stand up, etc. And that's, so there are different ways of doing things. And you know, if someone's in a battle with someone, a bowler, just a couple of the boys going with him, you know, again, not having to be nasty, just being there and just, you know, trying to team, you know, you're 11 on one or two out there, you know. So yeah, we have been renowned for being quite a nice team. You know, we haven't got many characters who are really in your face and things like that. But yeah, we're trying to sort of really get a good legacy going here, which I think we've got.
And it's been quite an interesting season for you, because you had Adam Voges as your four-day captain, but then he got called up to the Australia side, and then James Franklin came in. So there's a natural bit of disruption there where you're chopping and changing captains. How's the dressing room reacted to that?
Brilliantly. Not just saying that. We're very lucky with those two, that they're such, you know, great people to have around, let alone their experience they bring. Very calm and collected. Frankie's very chilled out. And obviously Voji was just brilliant. He came in and led with his runs, very calm and collected, never sort of panicked and things like that, which I think we need. You know, we're a youngish side, and to have people like that around is great. And obviously Bucky was with us the previous years, brought a bit of experience and you know, a bit of calmness to the top order. I think it, you know, I wouldn't like to say if either of them will come back, I don't know, but you know, if we can get one of those guys back for the end of the season, if they're not knackered from the Ashes, then, you know, that'd be brilliant for us.
Good stuff. Well, moving on, I'd like to talk about the 2020 season. It comes to a climax this month with the ever-popular finals day at Edgbaston on the Saturday of the August bank holiday weekend. Eight teams are still in the competition, with the first quarter-final between Sussex and Northamptonshire, which gets underway tonight. Well, simple question, guys. Who's going to win it? I've written down the quarter-finalists for you there to give you a bit of help. But you've got Sussex, Northamptonshire, they play tonight. And then there's Warwickshire, Essex, Worcestershire, Hampshire, and Kent versus Lancashire.
For me, it's when you get to finals day, I think a lot of it comes down to experience of the day. Hampshire were historically have been there every year and always seem to fare pretty well. So for me, Birmingham Bears can get through a tricky quarter-final with Essex, so you have a lot of kind of powerful T20 players. I would fancy Birmingham to do it on finals day. They've got a really kind of versatile side who have been there and done it, did very well in the group stage. So that would be my money. But to be honest, it's a lottery at this stage. I mean, there are eight good sides. Anyone can beat anyone in their day in 2020 more than any other format. So I don't think I'd be putting any money on it. But in these circumstances, I will happily bet on Birmingham.
Oh, yeah, I again, it's a tough one for me. I've actually been very impressed with Kent this year.
Yeah,
they seem to have sort of found a formula for it, which is really, really important. And you know, it's hard for me to comment too much on the sort of northern side of things, because I haven't really seen them other than on telly. Again, and I wonder how form from other, you know, forms of the formats is going to affect. Obviously, Sussex struggling a little bit in the 4-day stuff. Hampshire as well. I I'd like to see Kent there. I think
Sam Northeast has an amazing year, hasn't he?
I think and Bell Drummond's been pretty solid up top, and then they've got Claydon and Coles who have done they seem to know what they're doing in the middle there, and then obviously Treadwell. Don't know how much Riley's featured much this year.
Not so much. No, I think.
But you know, I think they've and to be fair, Cowdery's sort of chipped in here and now. I think they're a good side
and Billings as well.
Well, yeah, there you go. And Stevens. I mean, that's where I'd like to see them there.
I saw Kent beat Surrey at the Oval earlier this year, and
I was there as well.
Yeah. Were you with us?
I don't think I was with you.
Okay. and Stevens smashed, what was it, 80 or so?
He almost scored a century in about five balls. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
He's a ridiculous cricketer. He is.
He doesn't look like a cricketer.
No.
He's great to watch.
He's a bit unfortunate when T20 came in, because if it was 10 years younger, he'd have played a lot of international cricket in that format, I think.
Absolutely.
Kent are a good tip, but then they're up against Lancashire. We've got Jos Buttler back in their side, who could win the game on his own.
Absolutely.
So we don't know. Is that a good enough
answer? I would say in something like 2020, it's not a lottery, but it could go either way a little bit on the day with 2020.
Fair enough. Well, there you go. You've decided Kent. I'm taking that as your final answer.
Okay.
Ollie, Middlesex have struggled this season again in the 2020. Why so?
I'll be honest with you. It's really hard to put a finger on it. We've had good overseas bowlers come in. That's where I think notoriously we struggled more rather than with the batting. I think we were really high up there in the power play stats runs in the first six overs did really well, but then I think we were really low in the middle period with the spin and things like that. So yeah, I don't know, it's not always easy playing at Lords as well. Lords is great, but often you'll get a small boundary.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily a home advantage because you can't really prepare pitches that you're wanting for that day, etc. But I mean, no excuses. Fundamentally, to be honest, I don't really know. We've been quite close in games. I think where we've struggled generally is taking wickets.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference when you're getting new batsmen in all the time. And when we've taken wickets, we've won quite convincingly.
Yeah, you've actually sort of seesawed between, as you say, quite good wins and then sort of heavy defeats. There's not been that many close games. I saw you here against Kent, actually, in the first game at Lords. And you thrashed them, really. Yeah, an absolute thumping.
Match, I heard Rob Key on commentary when asked who he thought the best side in the competition were. He said, well, from the matches I played, Middlesex are the best side we've come up against. Then you look at the table and they're at opposite
ends.
It's
ridiculous. We had the same last... I think it was last year. We played Sussex and Essex in a double header here. And we got beaten by Sussex. And I said to the boys, they'll win it, lads. I mean, look at them. They had just batting all the way through, etc. And I think they only won one more game than we did. And that was the one they beat us in. It's a bit of a lottery, but there are certain teams that will put more eggs in that basket. I think I may be wrong, and you guys will know a lot better than me, but I would suspect teams that have done well in red ball have not done so well in white ball, and vice versa. In general, there'll be obviously.
Yeah, well, Yorkshire look like a strong one-day side and just haven't really done it either. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we just look here, Yorkshire, Middlesex, Warwickshire and Durham are top four in the county championship, and only one of them, Warwickshire, are in the quarterfinals. So
yeah,
there you go, the proof's there. You have actually, Middlesex have provided one amazing champagne moment for the 2020 this season when Nick Goblin's catch in the deep and his celebration. I don't know if you've seen it, Joe.
I did happen to see that, yeah. That was excellent.
Brilliant.
That's what we all turn up for, right? To see moments like that.
Absolutely. And I saw him take the catch, and then we were all in the huddle. And then there was a big roar from the crowd. It's like, what's going on? And he was on the deck. I was like, what is he doing?
Is it on YouTube? Can our listeners go and check it out?
Well, that was... you've set me up nicely there. It's on the Lords YouTube channel. So I didn't even do that on purpose.
No such thing as bad publicity.
All you have to do is type Nick Gubbins celebration fail, and it's 20 seconds of brilliance.
I have to just... Gubbo has done a bit of a full circle with his catching and fielding. He was a little bit nervous at the start. He has worked really, really hard. So the fact that he's taken the catches, I don't care what happens after this.
Understandably very happy.
Let him enjoy it, yeah.
And just to finish with the 2020, Joe, I'd like to ask you, the finals day at Edgbaston is always a great occasion, and it's sold out, and it's the fans have a lot of fun. Have we still got to... where are we in your mind with the English domestic 2020 sort of system? How is it working? Is it working? Sorry.
I think it's working to an extent. I think it could work a lot better. I think over time, there used to be a resistance to a franchise model, but over time, I think we'll probably have to adopt something along those lines. I don't want to see any county lose their T20 status, but to sustain 18 counties over a T20 model, I think it struggles. I think a lot of counties do very well. We were talking about this before the show. The London counties get packed crowds because people come after work. I think in some of the more smaller towns, I don't think they are getting the crowds that they'd hope. So perhaps some kind of franchise model where the money that there are less games that more people attend, and the money goes down to the counties and hopefully funds their four-day game better, would to me seem a better model. That said, I wouldn't be the person to say to some of the smaller counties that you don't have a T20 side anymore. That's difficult. But I think that is probably the way we'll go, and I think that's probably the way we should go. I mean, the Big Bash is, the IPL is different. The IPL is kind of just freakish, and I don't think you can compare or even perhaps want to compare yourself to it. But the Big Bash is a better model. I think England can look at and adopt something similar.
Would you say maybe sort of blocking out 3 or 4 weeks in the summer and just saying this is 2020 season and no other cricket around it?
I think so. I think Alex Hales tweeted the other day saying you can't expect cricketers to play at their best when they're switching from one format to the next the whole time. And Ollie's obviously a much better person to ask on this, but that would be my feeling.
Well, I don't know if there's franchise cricket. I might not play 2020 anymore, but personal point of view, and I think generally amongst the sort of cricketing professional community, I think the block we much preferred, regardless of whether that's as it was or with franchise. I think, you know, you've got to take heed from what's happening around the world and what's working. So I would not be surprised if they did bring franchise in. But yeah, I mean, the quality's down. The people aren't executing their skills as well. It's simple. Because you're not just focusing on one aspect of the game. You know, you do your Yorker practice and then you'll bowl Red Bull in the same practice. I think someone used Alphonso Thomas as a great example this year. Just wasn't as potent as he'd been in past years. And that's because, you know, he's practicing two different skills at the same time.
And that standard is key, right? Because you can say, right, we'll get the middle on Friday nights and that's working. But eventually people are going to be like, well, this isn't especially good cricket that I'm watching. People come along, and they're expensive, these tickets. I know they are at the Oval. I don't know how much they are here at Lord's, but it's an expense to bring the family along for a Friday night at T20. It's a lot of money, and they're not going to do that if the standard's not particularly high. And you look at the Big Bash and some of the fielding, some of the innings you see there. I don't think you see that as on a regular basis in county cricket.
Would you, as a player, enjoy the idea of saying, right, this is as the block we're talking about, 3 or 4 weeks? All you're playing is 2020 cricket, and just, you know, and absolutely, it becomes a sort of a festival.
I think we enjoyed it. We enjoyed it when it was like when it was in a block before. There are two different aspects as well. You know, it gives you a natural break from the, you know, grueling county season. You know, although you're playing games, you'll have the mornings off. You'll go and play in the evening. You'll maybe have a day or two off training. It does give you a bit of natural break, and then also in turn, you're not getting cricketers playing knackered, as well as being able to practice specific skills for that discipline. You know, it's going to be a better game. I've got no doubt, I've got no problems in saying that to everyone.
The key thing is you don't hear many people disagreeing with that point of view, and then it seems crazy not to adopt what most fans and seemingly nearly all players want.
Well, like I said at the start, when we were talking before, I was saying that you can't really argue if it's financially working. Because ultimately that's what keeps the grounds going and pays for the cricket. But I'm not convinced it has outside of what we were saying earlier, London and the bigger test grounds. I'm not sure it's even bringing in the revenue that it's designed to.
Yeah.
So if that's not the case, they're not making the money out of it, the standards are down.
Let's have a change.
Mm.
Right, well, to finish off, we're going to do the Lord's podcast quiz.
Right.
Which you two are, I think, the first two to sort of, well, take each other on again. Joe, you won last time.
Did I?
Yes.
I knew I did. That was disingenuous.
Presumably it's cricket based, so I've got no chance. I don't know anything about cricket.
For regular listeners, this is, well, is the end of the podcast. And what we finish with is a little quiz where we test both our guests on, basically, it's a potluck. Who is older? I'll give you one cricketer and one non-cricketer.
You say then, potluck, but if you know, well, if you know their ages, then that's,
yeah, if you know when they're born.
I probably won't know half the cricketers you say, so I've got no chance.
I should hope you do, because most of them are your teammates, but anyway.
Oh, no.
Right.
Seems a bit unfair.
Ollie can go first, as is tradition, the player goes first. Ollie, who is older? James Franklin, Middlesex captain, or rap superstar Kanye West?
Oh no. I'll go Kanye West.
Am I allowed to go the same?
You can go the same, it can be very technical.
Kanye West, yeah.
Well done. So you obviously do know when they're
I just
born,
know he's
Joe.
A bit older than I think he is.
You just know he's older than James
Franklin.
Been
around for a while.
This is the one thing I know.
That's one all. Yeah, it's Kanye West. He's actually 4 years older than James Franklin.
Oh, it wasn't even close. Yeah, geez, yeah. I shouldn't have even thought that long then.
Joe, you go first on this one. Who is older, Nick Compton or Kanye West's wife and a selfie expert, Kim Kardashian? Compo or Kim Kardashian?
Compo.
Is older.
Older.
I'm going to go Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian is older than Nick
really?
Compton, yeah. So there you go. Ollie, take a 2-1 lead.
Oh, yes, come on.
Ollie, who's older? Alistair Cook or Cristiano Ronaldo?
Surely Cookie. I'm going to go Alistair Cook's older.
This is a big point, Joe.
Thing is, I think it's Cook as well, but then I'm shooting myself in the foot, aren't I? I've got to go with. Hang on, who was the other person? Cristiano Ronaldo.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
I'll go with Ronaldo.
It is Cook, so Ollie, you take a 3-1. Pretty much an assailable lead.
Either Ronaldo is younger or he's got a very good beauty ratio.
There's not much in it. There are a few months difference.
Oh, really?
They're both 30.
Okay.
So there you go. Who's achieved more? Alistair Cook, Ashes winning captain, Cristiano Ronaldo.
There's a sub quiz.
No, I'm just saying it's just
on or off the pitch. Yeah.
We'll move on. Joe, actually, there's still 2 points to play for, so you could level the series. Who's older, former Middlesex and England batsman Clive Radley, or the Indiana Jones and Star Wars actor Harrison Ford? Rads or Harrison Ford?
Is it me first? Yeah.
Yeah, you first.
Harrison Ford
is older than Clive Radley.
Yeah. Definitely.
He's going to hate me for it, but I'm going to go for Radders.
Harrison Ford is older. By a couple of years. There you go. It's all down to the last one. You could have a draw here. Ollie, who is older? Australia coach, Darren Layman, or the Oscar-winning actress, Gwyneth Paltrow?
Oh, I like Gwyneth Paltrow as well. tough paper round for Buff, I reckon. I'm going to go Layman.
He's older than Gwyneth Paltrow.
Go, okay, Gwyneth.
It is indeed Darren Layman.
Oh, yeah.
So 4-2 to Ollie, well played.
Right. This time next summer, we're for the cider. Okay.
Well played.
You can play it over three years. Great stuff. Well, many thanks for coming on the podcast today. Thanks for sparing your time.
Thanks for having me.
What have you got coming up, Ollie? Obviously a lot more cricket.
Yeah, Durham next. Be a big game, especially up there. We've played them down here, so we've got them up there. It's going to be a tough one.
Best of luck with that.
Thank you.
And Joe, All Out Cricket, new magazine's just out. Well, it's been out a week or so.
Go and get your hands on a copy. We asked a panel of 30 or 40 people to choose their greatest English test innings, crunch the numbers, and we've produced a top 30. We've got some writers to write some nice things about the top 10. I won't reveal who the number one is, but it's definitely worth reading. We're working hard on our Ashes celebratory issue, with lots of other stuff in there. I'm speaking to Mohammed Amir on Monday, which will be in the next issue as well, so that should be interesting.
Interesting interview.
Yeah, he's in Pakistan. It'll be a phone interview, and I'm not sure his English is great. So interesting is
very interesting interview.
Obviously fascinating career, and he's back in cricket in September, back in international cricket, and apparently he's looking for accounting next year, so that'd be quite interesting.
There you go, there's a little scoop. So, right, well, many thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next month with more cricketing stories from Lords. So remember to follow us on Twitter. Our handle's @HomeOfCricket. Be our friend on Facebook. And for all the latest news from Lords, just go to lords.org. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.